So we are starting second week of the course, and we are gonna now talk about very different set of phenomena. So broadly, we'll be interested in the low dimensional electronic systems during these 2 weeks of the course. So by that I mean system in which electrons can move either in one dimension or two dimensions, and the physical systems that where such things happen include the following. So for example, one-dimensional systems are carbon nanotubes. Various semiconducting nanowires, so-called quantum point contacts, and later in this lecture I will explain what those are. And edges, you can also find that there are very unusual two-dimensional systems, which are such that they're insulating in the bulk, but their edges are conducting, right? So effectively, you end up with a system in which electrons can move only along the edge. So this system is also effectively one-dimensional. And we will discuss such systems in some detail later on in the course, edges of certain 2D systems. In terms of effectively two-dimensional systems, so we'll be considering systems such as graphene. Then there are certain semiconducting heterostructures where one can chemically grow them in such a way that generally they're insulating, but you get a conducting surface in the middle. So those are heterostructures made of gallium arsenide, indium arsenide, and so on. Another example of 2D system is certain so-called topological insulators. For example, there are also different kind of heterostructures which are topological insulators. For example, mercury telluride-based ones. And just like for the case of one dimension, there are also certain three-dimensional systems which are insulating but can host electrons on their surface. Okay, so effectively you get the same situation, so you can get a 2D electron system at the edge of some of certain 3D system. Okay. And so why would we consider such systems? So there is a couple of reasons. So you will see that depending on the effective dimensionality of the system, you can get very interesting effects related to the band structure disorder and interactions. Okay, so we will mostly be interested in the topology of the band structure, in the effects of disorder and the effects of interactions between electrons. And all of this can lead to quite unusual properties, right? So they can give rise to new phases, new phases of electrons with qualitatively new physical properties, right, such as unusual transport and so on. And moreover, you will see that in the systems, various quantum effects are strongly enhanced, right? So in particular, they're important for the electronic transport in these systems. So quantum coherent effects. And so, and the general regime in which we'll be working will be such that you know, we will require that the electrons propagating in the systems are phase coherent often, right? So which practically this means that we have to consider these systems at low temperatures, right? When the effects related to, let's say, decoherence due to phonons or some noise or some other degrees of freedom are strongly suppressed. Okay, so we will be interested really in big part of the course in the quantum coherent effects. And we will mostly focus on the charge transport in the systems. So let's start with the simplest example. So let's start by considering quantum coherent transport in one-dimensional systems. Okay? So this is going to be the topic of today's lecture. So generally, when we are thinking about transport, setup you should have in mind is the following. So you have some leads which are usually clean and made of some metal, right? So you can essentially neglect scattering in this. Then you have your system of interest, right, which is usually small and quantum coherent, and you have some second lead, right? And then you can, so this system can be disorders, there can be scattering interactions and so on, and simplifying assumption is to say, okay, so let's assume that leads are ideal. Okay, and essentially electrons can propagate here ballistically. And all the action happens here, right? So all the scattering and so on. So on some level, you can view these leads as waveguides for electrons, right? We just get them to your system, and then they can scatter and go and either get transmitted and go from the, let's say, source to drain, right? Or they can get reflected and then they do not contribute to current. So intuitively you can see that conduction in such a system will be really determined by the scattering properties of this system, right? So and what we will do in this lecture, we will see how you can derive resistance in the setup, how we can relate it to the scattering matrix of our system. Determines transport. And so, and In this lecture, we will formalize this intuition. But let me ask you guys. So all of you know what scattering matrix is, right? Yeah. Okay, good. So let's start with a very simple example. So let's start with an ideal one-dimensional wire. Okay, so let's say we have some wire, right, which is long in this direction and very narrow. Let's say this is length A, right? Then what would happen? Motion in the transverse direction would be quantized, okay? And you would get energy levels, right, which are spaced by roughly, say, for the transverse motion. Which are spaced by roughly h squared over m a squared, right, where m is the effective mass of your electrons. So, but in the x direction, you can still propagate. Okay, so as a result, you would get different bands which correspond to different energy levels in the transverse potential. Okay, so epsilon. So if you want to find the dispersion relation, it will be simply n plus kx squared over 2m. Okay, so where this is the energy in the transverse potential. So let me draw these bands. So they go like that, and they're spaced by the, so energy here is epsilon 1, epsilon 2, and so on. Okay, and now I can put certain number of electrons here, right? So which is determined by the chemical potential. So let me start with the case when I put chemical potential between epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, such that I am only filling electrons in the lowest subband. So, and let me ask, so let me attach leads, right, just like in this setup, to my wire. So there would be source lead and drain lead. Let me apply some voltage and let me ask what would be the resistance in this situation. Okay, in this case, notice that so far I don't have any scatterer, right? So it's really pure wire. So do you have any guess? So would its conductance be, would its resistance be zero or non-zero? Because usually, right, so if you take the Drude formula, if you assume that there is no disorder, you get infinite conductivity, right, or zero resistance. So what would you expect in this case? So would you expect the same or something different? Hey guys, any guess? So would it be zero or non-zero if you find the resistance? Still no guess. Okay, guys, who thinks that the resistance is also zero here, just like for the case of Drude formula? And who thinks it's non-zero? Okay, so it comes out equal. So somewhat surprising fact, so you see it's not obvious, right? But somewhat surprising fact is that in fact it's non-zero, right? So there is a finite resistance in this case, which is due to the fact that the system is one-dimensional, right, and not hair-dimensional. And let's just go ahead and calculate calculate the resistance. So how should we approach it? So let's assume that the chemical potential of the electrons in the wire is mu, okay, and let's assume that that we apply some voltage V, right? So then the chemical potential of the electrons in the source reservoir would be mu plus EV, right? So it's higher because I applied voltage, and chemical potential in the drain reservoir would be the same, so it would be mu, okay? Now, from this band structure, you see that chemical potential crosses dispersion in two points, this one and this one. Okay, so this is the analog of the Fermi surface, and near this point, carriers are moving to the right because they have positive group velocity. So, because velocity is given by the derivative of the energy with respect to momentum. Okay, sorry, that should be kx. Okay, so you see that here. It's plus V, right, and it's positive, so electrons with the momentum near here are moving to the right, okay, and the electrons which live here have here the slope is negative, right, and they're going to the left, okay. Now, since I have no scatterers, right, if I take some electron which is moving to the right, right, I can trace back its history because it never scattered, right? So this means that this electron came from the source lead, right? So this means that effective chemical potential of the right moving electrons, right, coincides with that in the lead, right, in the source lead. And in the same way, all the left moving electrons came from the drain electrode, from the drain lead. Okay, so now when I know that, I can just calculate the current, right? So current is given by the essentially current of electrons moving to the right, right, minus current of the electron moving to the left. And so how do we calculate either one of them? So it should be given by the electron charge, right, times density of states, right, so which is number of states per unit energy per unit volume, okay, times the velocity, right, times chemical potential, mu source, right? And similarly, this is the right current, and the left current is essentially the same expression, except I have to put mu drain here, right? Now, so what is the density of states in this case? So in order to calculate it, so it's essentially the derivative, right, of the number of states with respect to energy. And you can write it as follows. So it's just delta function epsilon minus v dot k, right, times the number of states in the unit volume, right? So do you guys understand where this formula came from? Yeah, okay, good. So then you get 1/hv, okay? So and when you plug it back in this formula, what you find is that this v cancels out with this v, right? And in the end, you got that e squared over h. So here it should be like that, h without bar, that's important, times v, right, where big V is your voltage. So you see that the resistance in this situation is h over e squared, right? So and it is finite. Or Often it will be convenient for us to look at the so-called conductance, so which is just inverse of the resistance. So in this case, you see that it's given by E squared over H. So you see that in this system, conductance is finite, right? And the remarkable fact that it only depends on the fundamental constants, right? So only depends on electron charge and the Planck constant. So now, if you think about it, this result is quite surprising because you don't have a scatterer, right? Yet resistance is finite, and it means that the heat must be dissipated somewhere, right? So where does it happen? It cannot happen in the wire, right? Because there is essentially no relaxation, right? And the implicit assumption that we put in this calculation is that chemical potentials in the source and drain are kept constant, right? It means that the more energetic electrons which come from the source to drain, right, they have to relax somehow, and that's how the heat dissipates. Okay, so really in this case, dissipation happens in the leads. Okay. So now let's consider a slightly more complicated case. So let's consider a quantum wire. Right, so system will be just like what we considered above, but let's add some scatterer in the middle. Okay, so we'll have again source and drain, but then we'll add some potential barrier, right? So which could be artificial or it could be some impurity. So that's not going to be important. So how do we describe this scatterer? So we can always characterize it by its scattering matrix, right? So you know that let's say if an electron comes from the source, right, then with a scatterer it might go through or might get reflected, right? So you can look for the for its wave function in the following form. So it would be, let's say, some amplitude that it propagates to the right, right? There would be reflected amplitude that it got reflected back, right? That would be in the left part. And similarly, it would be, you know, the same in the right part, but let me call the amplitudes B. Right, so and in means that those are the waves which are going to the barrier, and out means that these waves are going away from the barrier. So then we know that outgoing amplitudes B out can be related to the incoming ones in terms of scattering matrix, right? So it's a 2x2 matrix, right? And which must be unitary, right? Therefore I can write it in the following form. Okay. Now, this matrix must be unitary, but in addition, if you require that there is time reversal in your system, this puts an additional constraint on the structure of this matrix. So let me just mention this property. So this tells you that this matrix should be equal to its transpose. And you can derive it very easily, right? If you say that, okay, so if this is my solution where the amplitudes are linked by this relation, right? Also, I could take a complex conjugate of this wave function, and that would also be a solution, right? By the time reversal symmetry. And then you'll immediately arrive at this relation. Okay, so that's important. Now, once we have this representation, we can very easily generalize above formula for the conductance of the wire by saying that, okay, so we are sending, we keep sending electrons at some chemical potential mu plus EV, but now not all of them are going through, but some of them get reflected, right? So the current in this case would be the same as above, right? So it will be E squared over H times V, right? But I have to multiply it by the transmission probability, right? So let me call this transmission probability T, right? And T is just the square, in this case, T is just square of the transmission amplitude. Okay, so it's probability that an electron went through. So, and this is known as the Landauer formula. And it seems this whole thing might seem quite innocent, but it's actually it's a very very powerful approach, and it describes a lot of systems. And hopefully today we'll get to one really really non-trivial example where we would use this approach to analyze the effects of disorder. So, but before we do that, let me mention some physical realization of where this formulas can be tested and where they show up. So let me consider a system which is called quantum point contact. So effectively, quantum point contact is just a constriction, right? So let's consider 2D electrons, and let's assume that we have some so-called gates, right, which are big pieces of metal, and then using these gates we can create some potential profile on which electrons move. So those are gates. And if I apply some potentials to the gates, right, I would arrive with the electric field lines, which look something like that, right? And this means that I'm creating maximum of the electrostatic potential in between, right? But of course, since there are no charges sitting here, right, the Laplacian of the potential must be zero, so it's essentially potential profile around here looks like a saddle point. Okay, so if I would write the potential profile, it looks something like that. So let me just write it to the lowest order in x squared and y squared. So xy would be coordinates this way and this way. So now I have a situation which is quite similar to what we've considered above, right? So motion, so in this direction, motions of the electrons is confined. So I'll get bands, right, for different levels in the transverse potential. But if I'm thinking about electron moving in one of these bands, right, then it also sees an inverted parabola potential here. So now this problem, and so in this case, confining potential is just that of a harmonic oscillator. So I can write this energies En explicitly, right? So it will be just frequency in the transverse direction N plus 1/2. Now, in order to find the conductance of the system, I have to find the scattering matrix. Omega X is here. So this is okay. So this is a good point. So this is the energy of in the limit, right? When omega X is much less than omega Y, right? So when, but you're right that in general this is not the energy because you also, right, because as you go away effectively, your confining potential varies, right? So but I will use it as a parameter. I'll just need it as a parameter, and I'll need the fact that in this limit, right, there are different bands which I can label by this number N. So turns out that you can solve the problem of scattering of such potential exactly, right? And I won't do it here, so I'll just mention that you can find the solution in the book of Landau and Lifshitz. So but what we would need here is just the answer that in the nth channel, transmission probability is given by the following simple formula. So let me call this En, and so, and let me define it. So En is just twice chemical potential minus V naught minus H omega Y N plus 1/2 divided by H omega X. So where mu is the chemical potential. So in practice, the way people study this system, they engineer this potential, and then they vary the chemical potential of the electrons. They change this mu, right? And then they measure the conductance. And so, and from this, you see that that if you plot this function, right, and if you plot the contribution of the nth channel to the conductance, right, you'll see that, okay, so when this energy En, when it's negative, right, then the whole thing is zero, right, because electrons are effectively prohibited from going to this region, right, they have to backscatter. And if it's plus infinity, right, then it's one, right, so everything gets transmitted without feeling the potential. And so you see that, right, so for the nth channel, this transition between full reflection and full transmission happens when mu equals h omega y n plus 1/2, right? So And then contribution of the nth channel to the conductance looks like just like a step function with a width which is set by h omega x. So, and when now when I'm thinking about the total conductance, right, I need to add the contributions of all channels, and then what I would get, right, would be something that looks like a staircase, right, such that the I go from zero to the quantized value of e squared over h, then 2 e squared over h, and so on. Okay. So and this is very very well observed in these systems, and moreover, the systems have a practical application, which is the following. So you see that if you make omega x really small, right, then the steps will become sharper and sharper. So which means that derivative of the conductance with respect to mu, right, or the electrostatic potential would be very large. And this means that these systems would be very sensitive charge sensors, right? So if I want to look at some small system, and if I want to know the charge distribution or how the charge distribution changes over time, right? This would be a very good way to tell, right? So if some charge distribution changes, right, that's going to change the electrostatic potential, that's going to move the chemical potential locally, and then I would see the big change in the conductance of this sensor that I'm measuring. Okay, so is this part clear? It's not qualitatively different, right? So what we did, we just applied, right? Here we derived this simple formula, right? And here we just derived it for this given, right? Because effectively, this confining potential, it's like a potential barrier, right? So effectively, all I did, I just applied this picture to this real physical system, right? And then, of course, one new aspect was that here I have many channels, right? And they summed over them because they contribute independently to the current.
My question is, how come we have multiple channels here, but we didn't have
it? Yes, we do. We also do, right? Except, so. Right, so we also have, but, you know, we started with a simple case of single channel, because usually, you know, you can treat them as independent, right? And so it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A step. Yeah, very good. So essentially, right, using this Landauer formula, right, and the properties of this particular kind of barrier for its transmission probability, right, which is written here, right. So I can calculate the conductance of each channel as a function of the chemical potential, right. That's what I did. So let's think how the transmission probability changes as you vary chemical potential, right? So you start with the case when chemical potential is very small, right? In this case, this quantity is large and negative, right? Large and positive, sorry. So then I can forget about the exponential, right? Transmission is one. No, it's the opposite, right? So if chemical potential is low, it means that electrons see this as a very high barrier, right? So they cannot go through, right? So it means that transmission probability would be zero, right? So it's zero if mu is minus infinity. And now if chemical potential is very high, they essentially don't really see this barrier, right? Because its energy is very, very low compared to their energy. So, and then this formula tells me that the transmission probability would be one, right? When mu goes to infinity. So you know it's going to be a step, right? But now question is how wide or how narrow? And that you find from this formula. You see that the effective energy scale here is this, right? So this transition between 0 and 1 happens when you vary chemical potential by roughly h omega x, right? Okay, make sense? Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So I know that here is going to be 0, right? I know that here is going to be 1. So, and from this I can even calculate when it's going to be 1/2, right? So it's going to be 1/2 when essentially epsilon n, right? It should be so this whole thing should be 1, right? You should just interpolate between this, right, and see, and this formula would tell you everything, right? Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. So this is simple. So I just need to, right? So for the first channel, this step happens when mu is equal, let's say, h omega x over 2, right? Next step happens when it's equal 3 h omega x over 2, right, and so on. And then I need to add the contributions of different channels, right? So then that's how I get the staircase, yeah. And in the regime when omega x is small, right, the steps are well separated. So it's really looks like a staircase with good plateaus. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you can generalize this formalism for a broader class of systems which have multiple leads attached to them. Okay, and often such setups are interesting because let's say you can drive current through the system and you can probe the distribution of voltages, right, in different parts. So roughly you should be thinking about some setup like that. So you have multiple leads, right? Right, with different chemical potential, so it would be lead 1, 2, 3, 4, right? And you can, let's say, drive current between these leads and measure the voltage distribution here. So in this case, if your system is quantum coherent, of course the Ohm's law doesn't hold, right? And you need to extend this Landauer formalism to this multi-terminal situation. Right, so let me call it multi-terminal Landauer formula. So the way to generalize it is quite straightforward. So once again, you need to characterize your system by the scattering matrix, right? Except now it becomes a bigger matrix, right? So I need to write the scattering amplitudes from each lead to every other lead, right? So let me write it in such a block structure. S12, S13, S14, S21, and so on, right? S41, S44. Right, so here each block is gonna be a 2x2 matrix, right? Which includes incoming and outgoing channels from each lead. So for example, if I'm talking about block S12, right? So it would be matrix elements would tell me, let's say, if I send incoming wave here, right? What is the amplitude that it would come out here, right? Or what is the amplitude that it would get reflected, right? Mm-hmm. So so you can also define transmission amplitudes from each lead to every other lead, right? So here alpha and beta are numbers of the leads. So, and what you need to do is just sum over the individual transmission probabilities. And in the same way, you can define the probability to get reflected for each channel. And what you need to do is again sum the so, and here I also assume that each lead might have more than one channel, right? So it could be it would be analogous to the situation you considered here, right? So I have several independent channels in each lead. So this is just for you to see that this formula is quite general. So, and then you can similarly write current out of the lead A. Lead alpha. So it would be given by this is just the number of channels, right? Indeed alpha times the chemical potential of this lead minus whatever current came from the fact that electrons got transmitted to lead alpha. And you can define the generalized conductance, which would be change in the current, right? When you change in the current from lead alpha, when you vary the voltage on this lead, when you vary the chemical potential on this lead. And also let me define the relative conductance between two different leads. So which would be how the current in the lead alpha changes when you vary the voltage in the lead beta. Right, so it is just related to this transmission amplitude that we wrote here. So then your so to say quantum Kirchhoff laws would simply take a very simple form, right? So you know that rewriting these formulas in terms of this generalized conductances, I can say that I alpha is sum over beta alpha beta v beta, right? And then of course the From the conservation of current, I can get additional relations that sum over G alpha beta should be zero. Okay, so this is in general how you can generally describe transport in the systems, and of course the challenge is usually to calculate this generalized conductance. So that's usually not so easy. So, So, but this is the general recipe, and so in what follows we will apply it, for example, to look at transport and quantum Hall systems. So now let us consider a really non-trivial application of this formalism, right, which so far probably seems quite simple to you. But so let's try to describe a disordered one-dimensional conductor. Okay? And let's ask how would its resistance change with its size. Okay, so disordered 1D conductance. One D conductor. So let me think about it like this. So I have some one dimensional conductor, okay, and I have some impurities there. And let me model each impurity by some single scatterer, right? With some scattering matrix, right? And there is some random distance between the scatterers. Okay. So and then I would let's say ask what happens if you have more and more such scatterers, right? And so and the intuition from classical physics would be okay, you know, I can find the resistivity due to one scatterer, and then I just need to add them, right? So it's just the Ohm's law. Resistances have to add. So here you'll see it's completely different. And to analyze this, we would apply this Landauer formalism. But let me start by, yes, that's what we will get out of this. Yes, this is the point, right? So but have you guys heard about localization? What did you hear about it? Uh-huh. But did you study it in some detail or no? Ah, you haven't. Okay. Uh-huh. I see. So you haven't encountered it before. Okay. Yeah. So okay, even if you heard about it, I think this is quite different and nice way of deriving it. So hopefully it will be interesting for you as well. So let me start with, my approach is going to be the following. So let me consider conductor with n scatterers, right? And let me add one more scatterer. And let me ask what would be the, let's say, average resistance. Now, so I would describe this big conductor, I'm going to substitute it by some effective barrier with some transmission reflection amplitude. And then I have my, so this is the effective barrier, which is obtained by taking into account many, many different impurities, and this is one impurity. So you see that the problem I need to learn how to solve is that of two barriers connected in series, right? So effectively, I have to find the scattering matrix, right? And the way to do it would be the following. So let me assume, let's say, that this guy is described by the transmission amplitude T1 and reflection amplitude R1, and this one is described by the transmission T2 and reflection amplitude R2. And let me just solve the problem of scattering problem. So let me send an electron, right, with wave function, just an incoming wave. Okay, and here I would have reflected wave function. I would have reflected wave with some amplitude A, right? And in the middle, I would have propagating wave B e to the ikx and reflected wave C to the e to the minus ikx. And here I would have only the transmitted wave D to the eikx. Okay? Yeah. Okay, that's good. That's good. So I'll just use I won't go into detail since you guys will have to derive it yourself. So but the idea is that, you know, here at each barrier I can relate the amplitudes of incoming and outgoing waves, and then you solve the equation and then you find the effective scattering matrix of the two, right? Of the two barriers. And what you find in the end is, so I'll just use the answer. You find that the amplitude D, which gives you effective transmission, looks like that. And I will, in a second, I will explain what is phi. Right, so what t's and r's are, you know, but phi here is refers to the fact that when electron propagates between these two barriers, it would pick up some phase phi, right? So which is just given by the right, so it's phase pickup between barriers. Okay, so which would just be essentially, right, e to the I phi is e to the I k times the distance between the barriers. In general, this phase is going to be random. So then let me find the resistance. Okay, so and resistance in this case, it's a bit trickier than what we've seen here, because here, right, when thinking about this problem of quantum point contact, we were applying some voltage and driving the current between the same electrodes, right? But here's going to be slightly different. So here you want to know the voltage distribution in different parts of the wire, right? Because ultimately I'm interested in the voltage drop between here and here, right? So when I solve my auxiliary problem, I need to see how the voltages here, here, and here are distributed. Okay, so so the voltage distribution on the different sides of the barrier is actually different from the voltage drop between the reservoirs. Okay, so turns out that the resistance in this case is given by H over E squared. So let me call it. So let me call it R naught R over T, where this is the reflection probability and this is transmission probability. Okay, so you see that compared to what we derived there, there is additional factor of R here. And so, and you can very easily obtain this formula if you ask the following question. So you would have your conductor, right, and you would drive some current, and then you would have extra electrodes attached here and here, right, which would not drive any current but would just probe the voltage. Okay, so and you can right, so this would be voltage probe one and voltage probe two. And using this multi-channel formula that we developed, you can very easily derive this formula. So and that is left as an exercise for you. But here you can, you know, once you know this formula, you can now calculate the resistance of the system with one extra barrier, right, and relate it to the resistance of this system and this system. Okay, so and let me write out the result. So what you find is that R naught would be given by R1 plus R2 over 1 minus R1, 1 minus R2. So where R1, R2 are the reflection probabilities for the first and second barrier. Now, this is obtained, right, as a result of, there's a couple of steps here. So first of all, I use this formula to calculate R naught, right, for a given disorder realization with a given phase phi and given relative phase of these two reflection amplitudes, right? And then what I get is something which is really dependent on the disorder. So the answer looks like that. Yeah. So R1 is the reflection amplitude for this barrier, and R2 is the reflection amplitude for the second barrier. You guys seem confused. You guys have a question? Yes. Uh-huh. Guys, do you have a question or is it all clear? Yeah.
Can I just clarify the different symbols here? So R0 is the total?
Sorry. Here I was a bit confusing. Let me. This is the resistance. So let me actually change the notation here. So let me call it. Inverse for terminal conductance, right? But you should think about it as really the resistance. Mm-hmm. So. This answer is for a given disorder realization. Okay, so then if you want to know the average resistance, you need to average over different realizations of disorder, right? And then what you would find is that, so sorry, we agreed to call it G4 to minus one, right? That then when you average over disorder, phase factor phi is gonna be random, so you can just forget about this term. Okay, and this is what you get for the average resistance. And what is important is that this is actually greater than serious addition, right, of the resistors that you would expect from the Ohm's law, which would give you R1 over 1 minus R1 plus R2, 1 minus R2. Right, so which tells you that because of quantum effects, on average, total resistance of two resistors in series is greater than their sum. Okay, and so this essentially comes from the quantum mechanical interference, right? From different scatterers. So we have to stop here. So here we went way too fast. So let's cover this part more systematically during next lecture, and then we will push it further, and we will see that when you add more and more resistors, the Ohm's law really breaks down very badly, and the resistance of many quantum resistors in series is actually exponentially small, right? So this is a result we'll derive in the next lecture. So, okay, do you have any questions at this point? Yeah. you apply it. So usually, right, in these systems, you have global gate, which lives under your system, right? And you apply some voltage, right? And then because of that, right, the chemical potential changes. Right, so essentially you either pull more charge into your system or you push it out. Okay, any other questions? Okay, if not, see you tomorrow.